nurse-to-patient ratios, dementia survival rates, and statin use. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Hi, I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I'm here again with another episode of The Nursing Show. Here in the beginning, I'm going to be cranking out as many episodes as I can close together so that we can build up a bit of a library here at The Nursing Show, a collection of shows that will provide us with news, product information, medication reviews, and of course tips and tricks, all to make sure that we stay up on the things we need to know in the nursing field. Just a quick reminder, the information presented here on The Nursing Show is for general medical purposes only. It's up to you to check with your own review materials, your own supervisory staff, and your own instructors to make sure that you have the most current information available to you. Whenever possible, The Nursing Show show notes page for each episode will include links to some definitive resource that you can use to back and check your information yourself. And of course, all of that can be found over at nursingshow.com, the home of The Nursing Show. You can check out episodes over there, as well as other information posted on The Nursing Show blog. Other articles, other stories that pop up during the week will be all posted there, along with some commentary and links back to the original information. Also, you have a ready resource and a place to go to get this information. You can also listen to episodes there and subscribe to The Nursing Show while you're there, all with links available at the website. If you'd like to comment on anything you hear on The Nursing Show or articles posted over at the website, whether you have comments, suggestions, or corrections you'd like to offer, all of that can be done by sending an email to comments@nursingshow.com. We'll make sure we get back to you one way or the other and let you know we got your message, either directly by email or we'll just talk about it here on The Nursing Show itself. So stay tuned and stay subscribed to The Nursing Show in coming episodes. Well, let's get out of housekeeping mode here at The Nursing Show and move right on into some of this week's news. I'll lead off today with a story from California, and it has to do with California's historic nurse-to-patient staffing ratio law that is completing its five-year phase-in process. This was a program that was meant to revolutionize and increase patient safety in California hospitals. The ratios are 1 to 5 patients, 1 nurse to 5 patients on a general med-surg floor, and ratios of 1 to 4 nurses per patient in pediatric and emergency room settings. And these are not a ceiling, but a floor, the article I found talks about. It basically says that these ratios can be even better because of patients' conditions. So this is just a minimum staffing level. If there are more critical patients in a given area at a given time frame, the staffing level should be increased appropriately. There also are different ratios that are for more critical care patients. In step-down units, transitional units, you would have a 1 to 3 patient ratio. And in telemetry units, they would be 1 to 4. And in other specialty areas, they would also be 1 to 4, such as cancer care units or other specialty care areas. This is all important information for all of us to keep in mind and to remember that we need to be advocates for ourselves as well as our patients and make sure that such laws are considered and passed in our own areas. This is something that directly affects patient care. We know how busy the physicians are. We know how busy we are. We're all pulling our hair out trying to see as many patients as they can jam in front of us at one time. And it just impacts their care in a hospital setting. So I'm pleased to see that this initiative has finished its five-year phase-in process, and I'm hopeful that a similar process will be introduced in other states and passed soon. You'll want to check over at nursingshow.com for the show notes. I have two different articles about this California story. One looks at the specific law and the staffing ratios and phase-in process. The other looks at a local news source and a specific facility's efforts to phase in this process and how they dealt with some of the challenges they faced when looking at the staffing issues. So you'll want to check that out over there at the Nursing Show site. I'll move from California all the way around the world to the UK, where I looked at a study coming out of the University of Cambridge that was studying dementia survival time following a diagnosis. This study followed 13,000 people aged 65 years or older for 14 years. During this time frame, 438 of the study's participants developed dementia, and of those, 356 later died during the study time. This is looking at survival time for patients with dementia, and this includes Alzheimer's disease and other forms of diagnosed dementia. Let's jump to the next story, and we'll jump all the way from California around the world to the UK. A study came out of the University of Cambridge, where they have been following 13,000 people aged 65 years or older for 14 years. And during this time, they were looking at a variety of things, and one of the things the study has released now has to do with survival time following a diagnosis of dementia. Now, this includes Alzheimer's disease and other dementias. And of the 13,000 people, 438 of the participants developed dementia, and of those, 356 died. Generally, the average lifespan was about 4.5 years following the diagnosis. Women lived slightly longer than men in the study, with only about a half a year's difference, 4.6 years versus 4.1 years. And as you would expect, patients with other health issues generally had a lower lifespan as well following the diagnosis. One interesting thing that the study seemed to point out was that despite what we might think about patients with dementia, such as that they would be doing better in a familiar environment where their deteriorating mental status would not necessarily occur as rapidly because of a regular environment, a regular schedule, those kind of things, seemed to not have as much of effects in this particular study, including being married, living at home, and even the degree of mental decline, all seem to have no or little impact on their survival beyond the normal time frame that they're looking at. I urge you to check the show notes for this episode, and you can look at the study and the article yourself over at webmd.com, and there's links in the show notes for that. Since I'm doing news from the UK, I think I'll jump into another study that came out of the UK. This one looking at the effects of statin drugs on patients' risk for heart attack or stroke when those patients also have type 1 or type 2 diabetes. Now, these patients, of course, we know are all at risk for cardiovascular disease because of the diabetes. So do statin drugs that these patients might be taking have any positive effect when they lower their cholesterol levels on their risk for heart attack and stroke? And indeed, this particular study, which looked at 14 different clinical trials and a pool of data from 18,000 patients, seemed to point out that these patients did indeed find a benefit from taking statins along with their regular diabetes treatments. And what we're looking at is how the statin drugs worked in their system, and did it substantially reduce the LDL cholesterol, the low-density lipoproteins cholesterol, that's the bad cholesterol, versus the HDL cholesterol, the high-density lipoproteins. In fact, in patients with diabetes, when the level of their LDL cholesterol in blood draws was cut by 39 milligrams per deciliter, they saw a 1/5 less risk for having a major heart event like a stroke or a heart attack. Since most of the statins seem to cut the dose by almost 60 milligrams per deciliter, this could lower their risk for a major heart-related event or cardiovascular event by up to 1/3. And this is significant, especially in a patient population that's already at increased risk. which leads me to wonder if we know as much as we need to know about statin drugs in general and how we can educate our patients on risks and side effects and how to help them safely take this medication so that they can have reduced risk for cardiovascular problems down the road. And so I think I'll return with a look at statin drugs in just a few seconds. Let's look a little bit at statin drugs and their effects on our patients, how we can educate our patients to take these medications safely, and what side effects they might expect to experience, including a significantly severe one that we need to make sure that they are aware of. Statin drugs include medications like Lipitor, Lescol, Pravacol, Crestor, Zocor. If you find it in its generic form, it's easy to recognize because all the generic forms that I could find end in statin, like simvastatin, lovastatin. There are some combination therapy drugs out there that seem to be coupled with different medications. So you want to make sure you check your specific drug guide on those drugs as well. But how does this work? How does the statin drug interact with the body? Well, we first need to understand a little bit more about the LDL and HDL cholesterol. What does that mean, LDL and HDL? Low-density lipoprotein and high-density lipoprotein refer to the specific proteins that act as emulsifiers. Remember, cholesterol is a lipid, and it can't dissolve in the bloodstream and be carried about effectively. So it is attached and emulsified by a protein, which then carries it through the body. So your LDL cholesterol is your bad cholesterol. And this cholesterol, generally, this lipoprotein, generally carries the cholesterol out to the body's tissues and is responsible for forming deposits on arterial walls, as well as leaving cholesterol and fatty deposits in other areas of the body. So this is why the LDL cholesterol is bad. The HDL cholesterol, on the other hand, is responsible for taking the cholesterol back towards the liver, and it deposits the cholesterol in the liver where it is metabolized and released from the body in the bile. The statin drugs seem to be having an effect of increasing the number of LDL receptors on the liver. And so the liver actually starts pulling the LDL out of the system, leaving a greater percentage of HDL cholesterol binders. And those HDL molecules then, of course, are then easily absorbed by the liver, and the liver secretes the cholesterol in the bile. In the intestinal tract, cholesterol is reabsorbed. About 50% of it's reabsorbed, 50% of it's sent on through the system to be excreted. So if we can increase the amount of cholesterol coming through the system that way in the bile, then we'll actually excrete more cholesterol and eventually lower our total cholesterol levels by use of these medications. Now, these meds need to be coupled with a low-fat, low-cholesterol diet. Okay, it doesn't do any good if you're taking in a greater amount of cholesterol. And this may be an indication of the problems in the average American diet, which is extremely high in cholesterol and may point to one of the reasons for the increased risk of cardiovascular disease in the United States and other industrialized nations with similar diets. Patients who are taking statins alone used to be monitored for liver function tests, but that practice has fallen away somewhat as these have been found to be pretty risk-free in that regard, although there is some risk for that. Unless there was some other indication, that probably would not be the case for patients taking statins to have regular liver function testing. But there is a significant side effect that is floating out there, and that is an increased problem with a muscle disease called rhabdomyolysis. And this is a breakdown of skeletal muscle brought about by the body essentially attacking itself. And this is a worsening of a lesser adverse effect that is a myalgia or muscle cramping that is reported. So patients can have some protein breakdown, muscle breakdown related to statin therapy that causes just some general pain. But if this progresses to a worse a worse situation. You're looking at a patient that could be experiencing a pathological breakdown of skeletal muscle, and this will flood the body with protein byproducts and proteins and cause acute renal failure down the road. So all of these things need to be monitored, and patients need to be aware to report any significant muscle pain rapidly. Other lesser side effects that may be noted include diarrhea, headache, general difficulty falling asleep or even staying asleep, dizziness, sore throat, possibly an increased risk for upper respiratory infection, and joint pain. And with regard to the joint pain, again, when you have a patient presenting with pain in the extremity, one of the things that you want to ask them questions about is, do you have a joint pain or is this related to your muscles? Because, of course, muscle pain can be an indication of an onset of a further and more severe side effect. Of course, patients may experience hypersensitivity reactions, so you always want to make sure that they're aware of hypersensitivity symptoms, including rash, hives, itching, difficulty breathing or swallowing, and swelling of the airway. All of these would be indications of a hypersensitivity response. Statin drugs do have a combination effect with other classes of cholesterol-lowering medications. And so it's important to check these patients and educate them carefully if they're doubling up on different cholesterol medications in their medication profile. We want to make sure that they're very aware of the muscular side effects and how to recognize them, because these patients will be at an increased risk for developing rhabdomyolysis. And we want to make sure that they have the information they need to get treatment rapidly if this should develop. Another point you'll want to make to patients taking these medications, or remember if you're in a hospital setting and have to administer these medications, these patients should not be eating grapefruit or drinking grapefruit juice. And that is because the effects of the grapefruit or chemicals in the grapefruit and grapefruit juice actually reduces the metabolism of statins from the system. And so you could be increasing the effective dose that they maintain in the body if they are taking, if they're eating grapefruit or drinking grapefruit juice. And this, of course, will also increase their risk for side effects. So patients need to be advised that they have to cut back, not drink grapefruit juice anymore or eat grapefruit slices anymore in order to make sure that their drug levels are maintained in a safe manner. And so that's a quick look at statin drugs. I always urge you to check your own drug guide, your own drug resources, or consult the pharmacist in your facility for more thorough information on specific statin drugs your patients may be taking. This is for general informational purposes only, of course. You always want to make sure you also compare any drug interactions to anything else the patients may be taking, since there may be newer information available than what I have here. But I do have links to all the things that I found in the show notes for this episode, and you can check all that out over at nursingshow.com. And that's going to wrap up another episode of The Nursing Show. I want to remind you, you can send me comments, questions, or corrections on anything that's been talked about here on The Nursing Show. We want to make sure that it's a community effort. And if I misspeak in some way or misquote something, I want to make sure you get back in touch with me and let me know so that we can get the correct information out to The Nursing Show listeners. You can do that by sending me an email at comments@nursingshow.com. You can also leave a comment directly on any of the blog posts over at the Nursing Show site at nursingshow.com. Make sure you check in over at the Nursing Show site often at nursingshow.com, because I post up information and links to articles and studies that I find throughout the week that I think might be of interest to nurses, nursing students, nurse educators, whatever it has to do with nursing. If I find it, I'll leave a link to it over there at the Nursing Show site. I'll wrap up the show today with a song from a good friend of mine, Matthew Ebel. Matthew is a PodSafe artist who makes his music available for podcasters to share with their listeners. If you like what you hear, you can head over to Matthew's website at MatthewEbel.com, or you can click the link in the show notes. I also have a link to the iTunes store where a great deal of his music is available if you'd like to purchase it directly. As always, I'm Jamie Davis, the PodMedic. I'll be back soon with another episode of The Nursing Show. Stay tuned.
Doom Duke. Doom 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 Duke. Hungover again, and I vow right now it's the last time I give in. So to commemorate, I'll go out and tie one on. I guess I'll quit drinking when you're gone. If I put off till tomorrow what I wanted yesterday, I'll just sit here till the future come and slap me in the face. If I don't change my direction and I float out here in space, then you can't say that I've ever lost my way. Well, I finally gave up smoking too. At least I thought that's what I told myself I'd do. Then in a cloud of smoke, my car moved to LA, and my girlfriend got towed away. Well, if I put off till tomorrow what I wanted yesterday, come on, I'll just sit here till the future come and slap me in the face. If I don't change my direction and I float out here in space, then you can't say that I've ever lost my way. Comes up, well, I'll grab it with both hands. Lord knows I need a change of plans. And if I put off till tomorrow what I wanted yesterday, I'll just sit here till the future come and slap me in the face. If I don't change my direction and I float out here in space, then you can't say that I've ever lost my way. Then you can't say that I've